Welcome to another edition of Global Conversations. Before we begin, I want to read this prepared statement. The COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 is not my area of expertise. I have agreed to host several shows with people who have challenged the virus, but I have not taken sides in this debate. Furthermore, I do not necessarily agree with the opinions of any of my guests, but I am making an attempt to present the other side to this debate. There have been numerous articles, posts, and arguments presented by doctors, scientists, governments all over the world, bloggers, and the mainstream media, including in the United States, Dr. Fauci. These are all well known and publicized. There's no need to bring any of them on this show. So tonight we will hear from a Russian doctor who will weigh in on this subject. My guest tonight is Dr. Valentina Kiseleva, who lives in St. Petersburg, Russia. Dr. Valentina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Regis.
Well, I'm very happy to have you. I've heard very little from Russian doctors and scientists who have opposed the government policy here in Russia. I know that there are some who have spoken out against it, apparently very credible people. I have not been able to reach them to get them on this show, but I want to thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Now, let's start, Valentina. Share with me and my viewers a little bit about your background, your training, the education you've had. You lived in the United States for some 15 years. I want to hear about that and what you did. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. For almost 20 years, I've been the director of a medical center for 15 years in the US. As for my background, well, first of all, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, Regis, because I think you are touching on a very important subject, because the question at hand is actually the core issue of this global situation and the global argument. I must say that, first of all, I am considering myself a part of the Tyrian family, professionals, scientists, doctors who are proponents of the Tyrian theory, who are considering all the factors, all the natural factors, who are considering the nature of the human being and in the development of all and any disease, and who are not recognizing any of the arguments of the germ theory is valid because they've never been proven. And we'll get back to that after I will answer a question about my background so that our audience understands a little bit of on where I'm coming from. And I'm coming from a conventional education, but very good education. We've had, I must say that the Soviet education that I have received, I've graduated in 1997 from St. Petersburg Pediatrics State Medical Academy at the time, now it's university. It was the remainders of the what we call Soviet medical education, probably one of the best in the world. With I can compare because my sister, who is an outstanding rheumatologist in US, she graduated from medical school in US, and I've been with her through this process, and I can compare the educations. I've been involved deeply in helping her with that, and I can tell you that definitely the fundamental studies, such as histology, physiology, biochemistry, and so on and so forth, are definitely, pharmacology, have been taught and have been well presented much more in depth in our system of education than it would be pretty much anywhere in the world. And of course, I'm in no way diminishing the education of my colleagues in US, for example, or in Canada, but I know that a lot of it for them is their own research and their own work throughout their time of the practice or through self-research and so on and so forth. We've been privileged to get this in our medical school. And so those who have not been lazy in the first 3 years, they have received this fundamental background that have allowed us to be critical thinkers, who have gave us the foundation for and the ability to read research documents, to understand them, to see the whole picture and take this holistic approach that everybody is talking about. And that's why I've been, even though I have not been practicing as much, I've been practicing as part of my medical education. I've been through the medical school for 6+1 years, and last 3 years have been a lot of practice in the hospitals. I have both pediatrics and general practice education, and we've been working a lot in children's hospitals and general hospitals. And I can tell you that that experience was sufficient for me, because later on, like I've mentioned already, and you've mentioned, I've been an executive director of the Adult Day Health Center in Bellevue, Washington, where we've been running on a skilled nursing and skilled rehabilitative programs. And of course, we've been working very closely with doctors. Part of what I've been doing, other than developing the programs and getting the government contracts and stuff, I've been also very deeply involved with developing medical plans for our participants. And of course, working with medical practices, oftentimes discovering medical errors and medical mistakes in diagnostics of the patients or treatment and so on and so forth. So I do have that kind of experience, definitely.
Okay, so now I'll edit that little pause out. So now I want to talk about your involvement in this virus challenge. Mm-hmm. They don't want to call it an organization. They don't want to call it a movement. It's more of an organic structure. Mm-hmm. That involves many doctors, many scientists, many others who are professional researchers and investigative journalists. Mm-hmm. One of the best well-known, a couple of the best well-known people involved in this are Dr. Andrew Kaufman, mm-hmm. Dr. Tom Cowan, and a couple. They're married. They're both doctors. The Baileys in New Zealand. I'm sure you're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you are also involved in this virus challenge or challenging the virus. Tell me how and when you started doing the research and speaking out about this.
Well, a little bit of the background so that you understand. I have never been satisfied with the virology in general, because I've never been getting enough explanation on the, not as much the pathological process, but about how, for example, the virus enters the body, what are the mechanisms, why is it that the immune system at the very entry of the virus is not acting on it, and how is it exactly, so there was not enough description, step-by-step description a lot of outrageous pictures, a lot of abstract rhetoric, but nothing specific. Or you can go in depth, and then they will just confuse you with all this voodoo-moodoo language when you cannot understand the word unless you like sit down and dig in deeply. But then it still doesn't explain all this original first steps. And it sort of seems like the alchemy that is trying to really confuse you and get you away from the real subject. So I already had this dissatisfaction in me when this whole story started. But of course, I still was conventionally educated as an allopathic professional, and I wanted to know how to deal with it. Why is this virus so dangerous? And is it really natural or man-made? I also was familiar with the Rockefeller's report from 2010, the part of it, lockstep. So it seemed very much like the plan of that scenario. So of course I didn't have any belief in the so-called pandemic, despite the nature of the so-called virus, despite the origin of it, and so on and so forth. So I wanted to know, first of all, how to deal with it, how to protect my family, my friends, and see if we can find something that would be, if not a cure, then at least, or if we can even, prevent it, yes. These were the issues at hand. And of course, I was looking deeply into the research, all available research at the time that was out there. And there were many discrepancies that I found. And I kept digging, and that's when I ran into, it was actually still January of 2020. And that's when I ran into Andrew Kaufman's interview I don't remember, honestly, but that was the first time when I've heard from him, knowing his background, when he introduced himself, and I knew that he was not just a doctor, but he had his other degrees, relevant degrees from the MITs and stuff. And I've heard him saying that viruses do not exist. They simply have not been proven. And I thought, okay, that makes sense, but I want to know why, and I want to understand the nature of this claim. So I started digging deeper, and I went back in history, and I found a lot of papers. I found a lot of information on fraudulent practices of Pasteur. I found information on Bichon, and that's when the picture started to come together. Then finally, I've ran into these two reports, one by CDC and another one by the Euro Commission, where they clearly stating, and I have these reports published on my Telegram channel in both languages, in English and in Russian, stating that the virus have not been isolated. So if the virus have not been isolated, then what do we have the vaccine against? And I kept digging even deeper to find out the history of the vaccines. And I found that we actually never had what we consider to be the vaccines, at least not in its classical definition. We had something that kept being dangerous, that caused lots of problems, and something that actually is keeping being experimental. And when I realized that, of course, I wanted to get in touch with other colleagues, because I found that it wasn't just Andrew, and we actually even, he invited me for an interview. So we've also had this conversation and this discussion. And of course, I've been watching for the works of Dr. Tom Cohen, Dr. Robert Young. We've got in touch with Christine Massey, who actually invited me to this challenge, because she, even though she is not a medical professional, but she is, as far as I remember, a medical statistician who is excellent in doing an analysis and research. And you don't really have to be a medical professional to put two and two together. If you have enough information and facts, it's not about being a medical expert. You just have to be able to analyze valid information, it's simply not there. And she, as a person with the analytical type of approach, with the maybe even mathematical approach, have been able to provide excellent justifications for her findings, which made even more sense. Then I started to look deeper into the nature of the disease, and because we had to find an explanation, I had to find an explanation and explain to people who trusted me and who've been asking me as a medical professional, so why are people getting sick and how come it's working simultaneously and so on and so forth. So I found a lot of evidence of the crime, like for example with polio when the DDT was used, right? And they needed to cover it up. So they came up with this viral theory on the, you can cover pretty much any industrial crime with the viral theory, with the germ theory, because it's very convenient. And people wouldn't even question what have been done to them, and they, and you can avoid many lawsuits if you do it right. And if you, people are seeking for an explanation for their like immediate explanation. And viral theory is perfect with that because it explains many, many things. If you don't really dig into it, you just accept this. And this is sort of a whale for your consciousness, which keeps you afloat with your understanding of what's going on with you. It's very scary, frightening, and excellent for the pharmaceutical companies because they can then sell you pretty much any drug or any injection. But it's not how it really works, and it doesn't explain the true nature of the disease, and it does take away from the picture many of the aspects that should be studied, not only the toxicology, not only the effects of the radiation, not only the effects of the electricity, but also the resonance, the how we communicate, how we affect each other naturally, how we deal with seasons, the hormonal system, the endocrine system, how we are developing, the changes throughout the development, how we react to the changes in food industry, right? Because the Alimentary Commission have allowed many of the outrageous experiment with our foods, such as GMO and use of the certain pesticides, which are also the causes of the disease. And that's another reason why people are getting sick in large groups, right? But we are not even looking into those merely because we have this convenient explanation of the virology. And that's, of course, when I've researched, I wouldn't say every single, but I would claim several hundreds of the published researches on the virus isolation. None of them actually presents the true isolation, and none of them actually provides the control experiments. They've never been done in this industry. That when you actually take the healthy person and you get them sick, it never have happened, and it doesn't, or they didn't even take healthy cells and used all these antibiotics and serums and stuff that they're using on so-called sick cells to get the different results. They're not doing this because they know that they will get exactly the same results without any so-called virus, because it's not the virus that kills the cells. It's the it's these poisons that killing it. And moreover, they're not taking like human cells, but they're taking the kidney, the most vulnerable cells of the rhesus monkeys for this experiment.
So I have to ask you a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, you spent 20 years in the United States. You are very familiar with the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma in the United States. Multi-billion, maybe multi-trillion dollar a year industry. they don't get at the problems, okay, of solving or understanding what's going on with people. They treat symptoms at best, and then they make stuff that they market and advertise on television that people just eat it up and take all of this stuff. I have to ask you this. Is the pharmaceutical industry in Russia the same business model?
Well, first of all, unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry in Soviet Union, that we had back in Soviet Union, have been almost completely destroyed. And most of the drugs that we have today in our pharmacies are of Bayer's, Pfizer, and other global companies, pharmaceutical companies, or their like Russian daughters. So, well, that's one thing. Secondly, unfortunately, I don't know how much you're aware of this history fact, but I think 1948, when WHO have been created, and Soviet Union became the part of it. Stalin found that actually this organization is not an international independent organization, but it's being founded and financed by the Rockefeller Foundation. And that's when he pulled off from the membership and wrote them the letter, letting them know that we are not going to be part of it. And at that time, the medical field and pharmaceutical industry have developed differently in Russia. The herbal treatments were very well received and very well known. You know, I've been learning from professors who've been doctors at the time and who still knew how to approach the disease with natural means and how to help person without any like heavy chemical drugs. But unfortunately, after his death, Khrushchev have brought Soviet Union back to the, you know, we became the members of the WHO. And honestly, I think that the death of Stalin had in a way related to this, even though they claiming that the doctors thing in Russia, the doctors conspiracy was not the real thing. There is a lot of evidence that actually there was some conspiracy and there were doctors who wanted to be part of that because they've been promised lots of benefits from being members of WHO. And, you know, so there were people interested in him going and another person coming who would bring us back to this global partnership. And with that, you know, with us going back, of course, the pharmaceutical industry, including the development of vaccines, have took a different turn. And including the genetics, of course, which is also the science of question, because we have a lot of virtual information, but very little factual information on that, as it turns out.
Well, as I mentioned, this is not my area of expertise. I'm learning a great deal here in the last few weeks about what is going on. And you know, I'm always trying to look at, in whatever I do, my other shows, is more of a big picture, macro view of what's happening. But now I've become really intrigued. I want to go back to what you were talking before. You mentioned Dr. Andy Kaufman and others, and I am now familiar with them. Three of them I will host on my show September 28th. I'm looking forward to that because I've not heard from these people at all. How did you become connected, and are you connected with them, and how did you become connected with Andy Kaufman, Tom Cowan, and the others? Mm-hmm. And Christine Massey, by the way, was on my show last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've met Christine, if I'm not mistaken, at the Doctors for COVID Ethics group, which I'm part of. We had one big group first, then because of this dispute on the virology, we have split into two groups.
Now, Valentina, is this in Russia or is this a global?
No, it's international, and it's actually been started by a very sincere and inquiring Dr. Stephen Frost, I think. I'm sorry, I've got so used to referring to him by name that I might be wrong on the, don't quote me on his last name, but it's an international group of doctors, microbiologists, geneticists, and other specialists. And of course, Christine, as a medical statistician who did outstanding research, like I've already said before, she is part of this group as well. And she is asking some hard questions sometimes, but that's where we've met. And then there is another excellent professional who is not a medical professional, but who is a mathematician and professor of mathematics and physics, who've been teaching at Stanford, Dr. Umi Ray. And through her, one of her contacts, I've been reached out by Andy Kaufman, but I've been looking to get in touch with him anyway, so he just was one step ahead. And I think that through these people, I've also met another microbiologist, Mike Donio, who is amazing in his research, and he gives this different perspective as a microbiologist to us, and gives us this excellent overview of his science, and formulating great questions. In his group, I've not personally yet, but in communication with Dr. Jordan Brandt and others. And like I've said, Christine was the one who invited me to this challenge. And of course, I gladly accepted it because I think it's timely. It's a timely action, and we have to be firm with that, because we need these claimers to prove us that if they are claiming that this is the virus that causes these symptoms and these diseases, and it's not the treatment, and it's not any kind of radiation or poisons and stuff, and it's not the jabs, then they have to provide us with facts. And unfortunately, up until now, we've only been hearing some ridiculing and attacks, but nothing, nothing specific.
Yeah, well, all of us who are in alternative media have been called conspiracy theorists, have been calling wackos. Mm-hmm. We've been accused of being even controlled opposition. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about this whole virus challenge. I'm talking about the kind of things that I do, which are counter to the U.S. narrative, NATO narrative, about everything that's going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. So I know what that's like. I had over 550 films and videos deleted permanently from YouTube that had very little to do with anything on the vaccine, maybe one show, and that was it. So I know that people in this virus challenge organic organization have been accused of all of this. Mm-hmm. Conspiracy theorists, mad scientists, controlled opposition. They're on the take from somebody. And that has become a real problem. The problem I've noticed, especially with this issue on the vaccine, is there's so much out there that's contradictory that ordinary people are overwhelmed with it, can't consume it, can't understand it. And now they're taking sides based on their emotions, their feelings, or the likability who's ever presenting it. To me, that's a real problem. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to entertain people like yourself to present this other side. So let me ask you some more questions. Based on all of your research, your medical background, you have a very analytical mind. I also do not want to discount the outstanding Soviet education, which I have heard ever since I first came to Russia in 2016, and every year since, from people who grew up in the Soviet system, they all say the same thing. I think a lot of people around the world also are beginning to realize this. So this is my question. What are your own personal conclusions in layman's terms about the COVID-19 SARS-CoV-2 virus?
Well, like I've said, I would like to point out back to the Rockefeller Foundation report of 2010, right? And I suggest that everybody who didn't have chance to get acquainted with it yet, they find it, it's been published and republished many, many times. It's been on their site. They have removed it with the beginning of the pandemics, of course, but it's still out there and it's available and it's legitimate and it's theirs. It's published on my Telegram channel, for example, Siveda. I can give you the link. The channel is in both languages, English and Russian. But you can find it pretty much anywhere. You just browse it, and you, if you are persistent enough, you'll find it. And read, if you don't have the time for the entire document, because it's quite extensive, but it's also very interesting. At least read the lockstep part, because you will see all the parts, all of the description of this pandemics with masks and the lockdowns, and even the same terms that they've been using since 2020 and the beginning of 2020. And of course, if you look, you don't have to go into the science. But if you will look into where do people really die, and they die in the hospitals, not at homes. If you will analyze and will ask people who had very severe symptoms, they've either had multiple CT scans, which are extremely damaging to the lungs, or they've been previously vaccinated against the flu in the last at least 3-4 years. Which I think was predisposition to these conditions and has to be researched as well. These people have been drugged in the hospitals, and you check their treatments. Like in Europe, we had this Dr. Klein, who we invited to our roundtable in Russia discussing this issue. We've been talking about people being literally poisoned with a high doses of the hydroxychloroquine. Right, there was improper use of drugs. It was improper, misdiagnosis. My father-in-law have passed in the hospital with the diagnosis COVID while he was hospitalized with the cardiac issues. And he had clinical picture and every symptom of this cardiac condition, which he was not treated against of, instead of he was treated with a plan, with the algorithm that worsened his condition, and he died of the fluid in lungs, not surprisingly, because he didn't receive his furosemide and other medications that would stabilize his heart condition. And this is just a personal example, but I know of many, many others. I think that this is something that people have to start realizing, that people have not been getting sick from the so-called virus. It was something else. And it was something that was not, and of course the PCR tests, which are not really the tests, it's a diagnostic method, which we know that's been said so by the inventor of this test, Kerry Mullis, who have mysteriously died just a few months before the pandemics, and who said that PCR should never be used as a test because it's not going to provide any diagnostic value, and it have been invented only for the research purposes, and now they're using it for like for everything. And we also have to understand that people who have been receiving these PCR tests over and over and over again, their hematoencephalic barrier have been compromised. What is it that was on these tests? We don't know, but we should also look into that. Have they been, I don't know if it was something toxic on it, or it was there were some nanoparticles, but definitely there was something that would cause these symptoms, and lots of people have been getting sick after receiving this test. So there are many other factors that have to be considered and that haven't been considered, right? And that have to be looked into deeper. So if you're a critically thinking person, you just have to start asking the questions, and you'll see that it's not at all about some virus. It's about something, yes, man-made, but first of all, it's not a single problem. It's a multi problem. There are several factors that all kind of look alike, but when people are scared and fearful, they kind of look at it as a like universal issue, as a one problem, which while it's not.
Well, you mentioned the word pandemic. Others are using the word scamdemic. As a layperson, who I think I've been trained to think critically, I had a wonderful education that emphasized that. When this thing broke in March of 2020, I had just arrived in Russia a week or 10 days before. And what I noticed was simultaneously all over the globe, this thing hit. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, the same methods of dealing with it were implemented everywhere. Yep. Lockdowns, PCR tests, vaccines, mm-hmm. digital passports, no travel without this thing. This happened everywhere. And my first thought was this was something that was pre-planned. It could not have happened any other way, because never has the whole world ever, ever, ever acted simultaneously lockstep with anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I started to scratch my head and wonder. And then I read, like many other people, that Bill Gates was involved, the CDC was involved, the CIA was involved with this computer modeling of a virus pandemic, I think in November of 2019. And I thought, whoa, what was going on here? So I think more and more people, ordinary people like me, have been questioning some of these things, not on a medical scientific level, but in terms of, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Now, Valentina, I have to get to something that, being here in Russia now for 2.5 years, obviously, I know what all of the narrative is about vaccines, about social distancing, about masks, about lockdowns. As a person who's quite a bit older than 65, we were told you had to sequester yourself, home isolate. You could only go to the pharmacy or the grocery store, and you had to wear a mask even at home. This is the question I have to ask you. I have read very little about any doctors or scientists in Russia opposing this or presenting a counter narrative to the official narrative. I need to ask you, because you're very involved in this, what has been the response in Russia to challenging the whole virus story?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, well, first of all, I didn't use word pandemic or only in quotes, or I used word plandemic. I know you're aware of a scandemic term, but we also use a term plandemic. It's been pre-planned. Well, there was definitely there was a response, and even in a professional community, in the medical community, we had a number of round tables held by the medical professionals, organized by a Russian actress, Maria Shukshina. We even invited some international professionals, like I've said, Dr. Klein, for example, biologist from Canada, and forgive me, I'm not remembering the names right now, but all the people who have been realizing what's been going on and been deeply involved.
Let me clarify something. They were invited to come to Russia?
No. They've been invited to participate via Zoom.
Okay.
So we've had them on the Zoom. Of course, nobody could travel at the time. And we also had, there's been some Doctors Alliance created in Russia, which I'm not a part of. I've been invited a couple of times to be their speaker. But we have a little bit different approach and direction. They've been interested in this challenge to an extent, but I think they've been too cautious. That's the reason why I'm not part of the system. You know, I've been doing the shadowing in the States when I came, and I've been thinking about taking the board exam because my degrees have been evaluated and found to be an equivalent of Doctor of Medicine degree of the United States. So I had no problem at all getting my certificate. And at the time of my graduation in Russia, you wouldn't need any certificate. Now you do, same as anywhere in the world. Speaking of how the system is becoming global, right? But as I've been doing my shadowing with the doctor, it's when you actually working with the doctor side by side without being licensed yet. But when you're already a physician, I've realized that I don't want to be part of the system, because he knew, I've been asking him, why are you given this prescription? Or why are you offering this kind of treatment when, you know, in this case, the solution would be better, to approach it like this or that. And he would say, yes, I know. But the insurance companies would not approve of that. Or I could lose my license if I would take this measure. So even though it would be better, I have to follow these restrictions and these rules, which had nothing to do with a human's health. When I realized that, I've said to myself, okay, I'm not ever going to be part of the system if I really do want to help people and if I want to be successful in solving people's health issues. So are we running out of time?
No. I'm doing some research on my other monitor.
It's about
what we're talking about, so not to worry.
Okay, so the reason I'm saying that and mentioning that is because I have no as many restrictions like some other doctors do, the practicing professionals, because I'm not afraid of losing any certificate or license that I've never applied for, because I am not part of the system. And I am allowing myself to speak things that they cannot say out loud. And that's why I am not belonging to any of these groups. Not because, I'm respecting all of these people. I see what they're doing, but it's their choice. They want to stay part of the system. I don't see how they will be solving these issues, but they're hoping that even without raising the question of the viral GB in pseudoscience, I mean, though many of them are quite smart and have the same kind of education and are able to understand the nature of the viral challenge, they don't want to touch this topic. They want to stay away with it because they understand that they will either lose their license or certificate, or they'll lose their grants, or they lose their PhDs. They don't want this to happen, or they'll lose their, roles, the high roles that they hold in. So unfortunately, this is another thing that we have. We have the system that hooked many of the very smart, but maybe not so very brave people. And again, it's just everybody's choice, right? That's my choice, and I'm not expecting anybody to follow me in my steps. But contemporary Russia is not probably what it was like 30, 35 years ago in terms of people's desire or ability to, speak against the system. I'm not talking the government, I'm saying specifically the system, especially the global system, because they don't want to lose their quality of life. Unfortunately.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I need to ask you another question, because here in Russia, we've been told that the Sputnik V, developed in the Gamaleya lab, apparently very quickly, is safe. It's not like the other vaccines. Mm-hmm. I have no idea, not being a scientist. What can you tell me about the Sputnik V developed by Gamaleya? And by the way, recently, I think it was Pfizer that was announced was going to partner with Gamaleya. And I was scratching my head at that.
Well, Pfizer would not be the first one. One of my biggest suspicions and concerns with Gamaleya was that they've been partners with AstraZeneca for quite some time. And AstraZeneca sent their professionals at the very beginning to, as they said, to learn from Gamaleya. I've been working with Doctors Without Borders for quite some time, and with Western professionals, especially European professionals. Never ever would they want to learn something from Russians. Not because they cannot learn anything from Russians, but because of this, forgive me, stupid pride, and this, some sort of Russophobia, which is out there. I can tell you, it's out there. And there is no way they would send somebody and the professionals would come and learn something from their Russian colleagues, because they have no that kind of respect, at least at this time, to them, and they don't want this to happen, even though we could offer many of these opportunities, and we've been trying to through our mission in Russia, and they would never pick on that, because they simply felt that it's below their dignity somehow, whatever. So that was a red flag for me. All of a sudden, they send in their specialists to learn from Russian specialists, Gamaleya. To me, it was like they were sending their inspectors who were deeply involved in the process of creation of this jab in Russia. Then we had this molecular biologist, Yelena Kale, who did an extensive background research on this so-called vaccine that, you know, we didn't find any papers. Whatever they've published was, first of all, not published on their website, but it would be published in Lancet magazine. It was very general. There was no, they were like, I don't remember exactly, but they were like 9 people that they've been trying it on or something, like very low, ridiculous number for the first clinical study that they've been claiming they've been doing. And not they've never been able to provide us any proof of the virus isolation that they would do on their own so that they could use something. Basically, we've made many requests to them and to their parallel structures. And all that we've received is that they've received some sequences from China. But forgive me, you know, sequences are not sufficient to develop the vaccine. You don't have to begin. You don't have to be a scientist or medical professional to understand that sequences, the virtual sequences, which are, you know, very small part of what is claimed to be a virus, insufficient to develop the vaccine. You really need a live attenuated virus, which they've never been able to isolate or provide. So how exactly, what is it that they've developed? I don't know. Okay. I still have my doubts about that, and I have many questions to them, which we've all raised, and you know, not mentioning that it's still an experiment. They still didn't finish their clinical trials.
So here's a question that many of us common people, when I say common, I don't mean not educated. I mean not medically, scientifically trained, mm-hmm. are asking, because it's staring us right in the face. I have several friends here in the Crimea and in Moscow who have taken the vaccine and a second shot and several boosters. Every single one has come down with what they said was COVID. One of them is a medical doctor that I know. He was my doctor dealing with a particular issue. He was hospitalized. He's now fine. And another person here in the Crimea actually died mm-hmm. in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying, well, to myself, wow, it doesn't seem like the vaccine works. How is it that people are getting sick and some repeatedly with what they call COVID after being vaccinated and boosted several times? Am I like cuckoo? Am I nuts for even questioning this?
Well, excellent question. Well, first of all, one thing that I didn't mention that I have to bring to the table in lay terms, we have this term of a nosological form for disease. Nosological form is the form when you can describe, like diabetes, for example, it has its own signs and symptoms. And you would never confuse it for anything else, like the pancreatitis, for example. You would know it's a diabetes, right? And you would know how to deal with it, the diabetes type 1, for example. There would be very, very specific signs and symptoms for this particular disease. None of this is available for so-called COVID. We're not even talking about, let's take the virus challenge away from the picture. There are no specific signs or symptoms. Some would say, okay, what about anosmia, right? The loss of smell or taste. It's a non-specific symptom. Any poisoning, chemical poisoning, comes with a loss of smell or taste. Yes, it's been known by toxicologists for years, especially for military toxicologists. Take the old study books, and you'll find it there. It's out there. It's the depletion of zinc that causes it. Sometimes it's the can be the mechanical damage of the olfactory nerve. By this so-called PCR test and many other reasons that would cause these symptoms. The high fever, the pneumonia, and other syndromes or symptoms are not specific to this disease. They can be symptoms or syndromes of other diseases as well. So COVID does not have a single specific symptom. Keep in mind that. Now that we don't have any specific, what is it that we are trying to prevent? What is it that we are treating? And how is it that people, after like you saying, after being jabbed, are getting sick? What is it that they're getting sick with? With the consequences of the vaccination or with so-called virus? Then if it's with the virus, what are the specific symptoms? How do we really know? And like I've said, the PCR test is not an informative test. CT scan is not an informative test. On the contrary, it's damaging. And every time you're doing it, like read the PubMed, not even the PubMed, the Medscape, you'll find there that one CT scan equals to approximately 100 to 200 x-rays. Just think about that. Just think about what it does to your body, what it does to your health, and what is it that you're really feeling out, you know, so sick from? Is it from the disease or from 2, 3, 4 CT scans? And then, of course, like I said, what is this? What do we have in this jab? Why is it that we cannot get clear and proper information on the containment of it? We don't have any, like, we hearing all about this mRNA, but again, it haven't been proven. I've been speaking to many, many geneticists. They are unable to prove that they can actually, produce any mRNA. They are speculating that it is. And honestly, if we understand, those who understand how the immune system works would understand that the foreign protein, for example, or foreign mRNA or DNA would be immediately destroyed in the blood without maybe some fever, but without any consequences and would leave no residue. So how is it that it's working in your body? But what we know from Dr. Young's publications, for example, vaccines like Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, other vaccines are, you know, they are finding the graphene oxide in there. And I've been also doing some research. I don't know if I've mentioned or not, but I've been part of the Singularity University executive program. And ever since then, I signed up to them and I'm receiving all the latest news. And I know that, for example, Rice University have been studying the effects of the voxid graphene in the human body for a very long time. And they've been interested in getting people jabbed with it so that they would have some sort of the new neural system in our body, which is a completely separate issue. But this is something that, and there are many studies, if you look into it, PubMed has lots of publications on the oxid graphene and its ways of use, but also on what it does to your blood, for example, under certain circumstances. And it seems like, we might be having some nanoparticles, and they actually even claiming that, yes, they're using some nanoparticles. Nanoparticles of what? Is it organic or non-organic nature? How does the human body react to it? Why are you not transparent about it? Why is it that we cannot even, you're asking me about gamma ray, but I would like to be able to purchase these vials and send them to an independent lab, and I cannot do that in Russia. Why is it? What is it in those vials so secretive that we cannot even get to their core of it? It has to be available. It's a matter of national security. We're talking about human's health here.
Wow. Valentina, this has been an education for me, and I know it will be for most of the people that view this. And because of the coverage that I've given to this over the last couple of months, some of the shows have seen 60,000 plus views. Many of the others are in the thousands and tens of thousands. So this has been very informative. I haven't heard this kind of discussion yet from someone like yourself. And I want to thank you very much for this. You know, there's a lot more questions that I would have, but we basically, I like to keep the show to about an hour, and we're just about that right now. So maybe for another time. So thank you so much for your time and for your willingness to come on the show and share what you know about this virus and the vaccine.
Thank you for the invite and for this opportunity to speak openly and freely.